I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul, Mission Control, Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We're excited about this one, fellow conspiracy realist. We like you, hopefully, love cryptids. And you guys remember, recently we republished a classic episode about cryptids from Australia, and we got so much cool feedback from that, we thought now might be the evening to follow up with a new cryptid exploration. It's a bit of an obscure one for many people. You might not have heard of it unless you're from a specific region of Pennsylvania. No spoilers just yet. Let's start at the beginning. Here are the facts. For anybody who listens to the show and doesn't know what a cryptid is, how would we explain this?
A mystical creature that may or may not exist.
That's pretty great.
Creatures, biological creatures, often, sometimes a little more magical, that exist in folklore. Like, tales about these creatures have been told a lot of times orally over the course of centuries.
I tried to straddle that line there by saying mystical, because I think mystical can be magical, but doesn't have to be. It could just be that they have an aura of mystery to them.
Sort of like mazes and puzzles.
Yeah, exactly. Venn diagram stuff.
Well, yeah. I it's really interesting that cryptids range from highly plausible, like slight variations on known species of animals, to, I would say, on the other end is that magical thing that's maybe not even existing on this plane at all times.
Mythological, right? Legendary creatures. Yeah, and there are a lot of Venn diagrams. Obviously, the most famous cryptids here are things like Bigfoot, Nessie, aka Loch Ness Monster. I still think that's an unfair name. The Chupacabra, Goat Sucker, not a great street name. But that's just the sort of tip of the iceberg, edge of the forest. Every civilization throughout history has some kind of record or description or belief in some sort of cryptid, right? And often it might be a misidentified real creature, right? How, like, elephant skulls most likely gave rise to the mythology surrounding the Cyclops. And we know that as science advances and as more and more people explore more and more parts of the world, belief in some cryptids has waned over the centuries, but a lot of people are still convinced there are undiscovered creatures out there, usually in remote areas of the surface or deep in the depths of the ocean, which in a previous episode is where we I think that's where we concluded that large undiscovered creatures would most likely have to be in the ocean at this point.
Yes, and they are.
We've also talked a lot about the outback lately, you know, where if there were going to be some, it might be in vast, difficult to explore places, you know, on Earth.
Antarctica underneath the ice somehow.
The steppes of Central Asia. Well, I'm holding out for that Mongolian death worm, guys.
Ooh.
It's just such a cool name.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There are, okay, though, we always want to point out, there are also creatures that have been considered cryptids of a very specific type, and then later they have been proven to exist. They're almost always going to be animals that were thought to have been alive at one point and then gone extinct, and then they're rediscovered. The coelacanth being the most famous example, and some of that obviously goes down to the condescension of European scientists back in the day through history, and so they would say it's not discovered or it's not real until we from Cambridge or whatever see it in person.
Oh yeah, there were recent sightings again of the Tasmanian tiger that when it went extinct, at least according to most everyone. I love seeing those reports because it's often a trail camera or something that catches what really does look to be a Tasmanian tiger, but there's no way to verify.
Unless you habeas corpus, unless you have the body or you have the scat, which is just, the poop, not the scat man. I don't know. Ask the scat man what he thinks of the Tasmanian tiger. Unfortunately, I believe he may have passed.
Sweet up top.
That guy is huge in Japan, by the way, still. Oh,
of course he is.
Because he did really like
snow in Japan, too. Not the, weather phenomenon, but Informer, that Biggie Boom Boom Bam.
Yeah. And music is going to come up a lot in tonight's episode. This information is familiar to all long-term cryptid fans or cryptozoology fans. I said long-term as though it's a medical condition. That's not the implication. But there is good news as of 2024. I guess we are long-term cryptozoologists enthusiasts. But as of 2024, last year seems to have been a stellar year for cryptids. The more preferred term now is lost species. And we have to think of it like a large scale murder mystery. Usually, like the big question in the mass extinction of Earth is at what point do we say, okay, give up the ghost, that animal is gone from the world, that species is no more. We used to say, if you haven't seen it in the wild or on the streets or in the zoo for 50 years, then you can say it's extinct. But it looks like, fortunately, a lot of those deaths got announced prematurely.
For example, back in the 90s, the International Union for Conservation of Nature revised this to kind of change the language a little bit to deem species extinct if certain criteria were met. One that they refer to in the document is if no reasonable doubt exists that the last individual member of that species has in fact died. And sometimes they're can be discoveries that lead to, finding out that's not in fact the case. For example, in 2023, there was a rare lizard called I'm guessing it's Lyons, because it's spelled with a Y like in France. Lyons, maybe, whatever. Lyons grassland striped skink was rediscovered in, ding, 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 Australia. So just saying, a lot of places to hide in that there bush.
And it's just tough to get out there, stay for the amount of time you would logically need to observe the wild. And it's weird too, because these aren't all bugs. We'll give you a couple more examples. A colony of little penguins, that's what they're really called, was
that's a card in there is a card for that in Wingspan. It's called the little penguin. It's adorable.
Well, good news for them, because they had a colony that went extinct about a little more than 30 years ago, and they were rediscovered. They had returned and a new little penguin had been hatched, an even littler or tinier penguin. And this happened, decades after every human expert was convinced they had been wiped out by foxes, possibly dogs. And then there's more stuff. There's an echidna out in the middle of nowhere rainforest in Indonesia. People thought that was extinct until November of last year. The echidna's
You're
name.
You're saying it was gone till November?
It was gone till November. That's beautiful. The echidna's name, this is beautiful too, is Zaglossus attenborough, after David Attenborough.
Of course. God, I'm surprised there are more things named after David Attenborough. Did you know that all bird names, sorry guys, I've been playing a lot of Wingspan lately. Did you know that all bird names named after people are going to be changed? That's like a thing?
I was not aware of that, yeah, but that makes
it's
sense.
It's really interesting.
But they're going to keep all the, they're going to keep all the prank names, like the red tit and all that crap.
Oh, there's plenty of tits for days in Wingspan, you guys. So many tits. Unbelievable.
So we also say that we also have to point out, as we've said previously, that in the case of these rediscoveries, as inspiring and warm and fuzzy as they feel, they're happening because of some other terrible things that are happening. Extinction is spiking, right? The age of the Anthropocene means that more humans are getting into places, encroaching on traditionally wild animal territory. Still, it's inspiring, and this is sort of a love letter, this episode, to a particular cryptid that we would like to inspire, and maybe at the end we can figure out whether we have decided to believe in this guy. If there's one cryptid I think we collectively want to see more of in 2024, it's the squonk. Now, he's not the sexiest. We did a little thing online to try to boost his self-esteem. The internet largely agrees the sexiest cryptid is Mothman. That's known, right?
Just because of that group. Dumper, right? I mean, and those
he's
those
got
abs.
Like nine abs.
Unbelievable.
The sexiest human-like cryptid, maybe?
There you go. Yeah, right? Let's be inclusive. Oh, let's be inclusive.
That's a caveat. Right? Sure.
A lot of cryptids may not walk upright or, you know, have dumpers like that or abdominals that are just chiseled. But there's other things. The lines and curvature on some cryptids could be considered quite
the velveteen folds of their floppy old man skin.
There's a beauty to imperfection. I think it was Leonard Cohen who said there's a crack in everything. That's how the light,
that's
gets,
the light
in.
Gets in. Baby.
Well, think about Nessie, just how smooth it must be. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's really in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? Not a Dungeons & Dragons joke, but I'm very into Dungeons & Dragons again. The squonk is not the most well-known cryptid by a long shot, but according to some surprisingly old folklore, it may just be the world's saddest cryptid. We're going to tell you why after a word from our sponsors.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
Here's where it gets crazy. We're doing a great job with the description. I love velveteen skin there. Maybe we talk a little bit about the hemlock forest of northern Pennsylvania. This guy has a pretty small range.
Oh, yeah. When we say the hemlock forest, we mean all the dang hemlock trees that exist in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them, and this thing is allegedly existing somewhere in that area. If you look at a map, you can find several like natural reserves that are kind of not based on, but named after the hemlock trees that exist within the area. But I think if you look on a map and the way it's described in many places on the internet, it's just hemlock forest, North Pennsylvania.
It's pretty vague.
One quick question that I mean, maybe others are wondering, hemlock, the tree, is the hemlock, the poison derived from the hemlock tree, or are those two completely different things?
I'm pretty sure that the poison hemlock is it a plant? I think the hemlock that's poison, it's kind of like a carrot.
Yeah, it's got little white flowers. Poison hemlock, small white flowers. So I don't think they're related, but that's I've always been confused. I'm glad we took the moment.
I'm glad we took the moment to
figure that out.
Because hemlock trees are actually conifers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But this is Conium maculatum.
Mm-hmm. I think hemlock is around the world, right? Hemlock trees.
Yeah, they look heck of a lot like pines. I mean, they really, you know, they got that same shape. Very much that feel of Oregon, kind of, you know.
You have a cool scientific name, Suga.
Yeah.
Suga canadensis.
Yeah. Or Suga mertensiana. Because Suga is a genus, right?
So sure.
There are a bunch of folks in the family there. But we were looking into, we're trying to find some specificity, like which hemlock forest in particular. But according to all the lore, the squonk just doesn't have a mailing address. It has a general area. So you got to come through and you have to listen very closely, because the best way to find the squonk is to wait for the sound of weeping, because this semi-quadruped has a pretty rough skin condition. And it, according to the stories again, it is smart enough to feel bad about itself. So it is always lachrymose. It is always just weeping and weeping. And it's tough to catch, because we'll see that some people call it stupid when they're describing it. But no squonk has ever been officially entered into the scientific record, because even in the stories where they catch him, he uses his superpower, which is that he dissolves into bubbles and tears when he is apprehended or captured.
Jesus. Does he have a function? Sorry. What's he for? What was he made for?
Well, for trapping. He was made for trapping, as we have found from was an entry from the 1800s that was like somebody just writing down their daily goings about in Waverly, Nebraska, or Lancaster County out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned the squonk.
Yeah. Yeah. You can. It's weird, because you would think with, you know, understandable validity, you might think, wow, this guy seems like an internet meme. Surely it's a recent creation, like Slender Man or something. But the use of the word squonk and depictions perhaps of these creatures date back, as you said, Matt, centuries. The Nebraskan settler's diary that we're mentioning, 1878, is great, because I just found this one of interest because it's dropped so casually, and because it's not clear if he's talking about a squonk, because a squonk is not, they're thought to be Pennsylvanian, right? Possibly desert immigrants to the Pennsylvania forest, but you don't hear about them in Nebraska, except on February, what is it? There it is. On February 27th,
a Wednesday.
1878, a Wednesday, where a guy says, well, we'll get a little ephemeral with it. Went to Salt Creek and set three traps for otter and two for mink. Caught two squonk, then I was mad and went to Literary in the evening. Weather warm.
It's so great. What does that mean? I went to literary.
You mean like a comp, like a reading competition of some kind? What?
Maybe it's well, he goes to the Literary often because on January 23rd, the guy's also at the Literary. So it may be just the local hangout spot in town, right? Or maybe it's like the community hall or the Literary Center.
I think it's got to be just some kind of, as you said, gathering place, because there are several other entries that C.C. Beach makes in this diary where he's like, and then Mr. Perkins joined me to my house. Lovely fellow. Then I stayed over at this place. Very fine folks. And just very...
He's a trapper, too. So he's
he's just making his way about. And sometimes he goes to Literary. And sometimes he catches two squonk or squirrel.
But he doesn't
or
want
skunk.
To catch them. Yeah, or squirrel or squonk. But he was mad because he's looking for mink and otter.
It makes me think of like snipe hunting, you know? Like that was another kind of mythical creature that I think, you know, people would use to sort of make fun of inexperienced hunters, tell them to catch a snipe, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Boy Scouts that do that. I'm glad we're getting to that now, because that's something I think is important to the conversation here. We'll see. It's an excellent setup because we'll see some of the, I'll say, similar narrative threads, right? Like Samuel Johnson apparently mentions the squonk in the description we've just gave you in his dictionary. And then the most in-depth early mention, what really puts this guy on the map, is a book by a guy named William Thomas Cox. It's called Failsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods with a Few Desert and Mountain Beasts, 1910.
That's kind of, wow. So we're mainly talking about creatures of the lumber woods. We're going to throw in a few desert and mountain beasts.
Just a few.
Just to round it out.
This is the Fearsome Creatures of the Lumber Woods with a Few Desert and Mountain Beasts is a book that purports to be a compendium, a field guide of creatures that are considered fantastical, legendary, or cryptozoological. And went back and found the original book, ended up reading a lot of it because it's a fun ride, but thought it would be fun in the interest of some performance with our theater backgrounds if we kind of round robined the description of the squonk. It's about three paragraphs long, and I don't know, there's a poetry to it.
The range of the squonk is very limited. Few people outside of Pennsylvania have ever heard of a quaint beast which is said to be fairly common in the hemlock forests of that state. The squonk is of a very retiring disposition, generally traveling about at twilight and dusk. Because of its misfitting skin, which is covered with warts and moles, it is always unhappy. In fact, it is said by people who are best able to judge to be the most morbid of beasts. And I know we're Pennsylvania here, and I was putting some Southern on it, but it's the only way I know how to talk old-timey.
Hunters who are good at tracking are able to follow a squonk by its tear-stained trail, for the animal weeps constantly. When cornered and escapes, seems impossible, or when surprised or frightened, it may even dissolve itself in tears. Squonk hunters are most successful on frosty moonlight nights when tears are shed slowly and the animal dislikes moving about. It may then be heard weeping under the boughs of dark hemlock trees.
Mr. J.P. Wendling, formerly of Pennsylvania, but now at St. Anthony Park, Minnesota, had a disappointing experience with a squonk near Mount Alto. He made a clever capture by mimicking the squonk and inducing it to hop into a sack in which he was carrying it home, when, suddenly, the burden lightened and the weeping ceased. Wendling unslung the sack and looked within. There was nothing but tears and bubbles.
Oh, squonk bubbles.
Okay, these descriptions are remarkably cogent. and like I don't, I, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't feel that these are the descriptions of something made up. Or do you? Do you think this is like,
good story is a good story, man. I mean, Joseph Campbell was right about hero's journey. Some stuff just works in a story, so it sticks around, right?
It has the ring of truth to it, is all I'm getting at.
There we go. They give the squonk a taxonomic definition as well, or term, lacrima corpus dissolvens. So it combines the Latin terms of tear, body, and dissolve. So its scientific name is dissolves into tears.
What if it doesn't actually dissolve? What if it shrinks itself down because its body mass is like 99% liquid, or, you know,
and it can actively dehydrate. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's smart. I like that. And this is a somewhat, I guess, if not generous, it is a somewhat sympathetic description of a squonk. It's saying, hey, it feels bad. Its life is tough. Another very, very similar book published in 1939, written by a different author, but with a very similar title. It's a lot meaner. It's more of a diss track to the squonk. It's like, which squonk hurt you? Did you and the squonk date for a while? Why are you describing it as slow and of a low mentality? Low mentality is such a weird insult.
Yeah. And ascribing it to a creature that clearly is, you know, reproducing. It wouldn't be here if it wasn't reproducing.
Unless it's the one of its kind, you know, and it's somehow supernatural, right?
Oh,
maybe it jumps through dimensions, like the people have argued that Bigfoot might.
Well, it can dissolve itself in tears, y'all. It can dissolve itself in tears and bubbles. Perhaps that's some sort of form of teleportation.
Mm-hmm. But see, maybe they're not tears. Maybe it's creating a portal that it can then, like, travel through.
Ectoplasmic goo, maybe, perhaps.
It's just its leavings, yeah. They also said in this 1939 book, also called Fearsome Critters, they said the squonk is, quote, probably the homeliest animal in the world, and it knows it. Which is, like, weirdly personal. So it's we aren't able to speak with Henry H. Tyrone because our Ouija board's out of order. But I don't know, man. He's all gas, no brakes on dissing this guy. And we have no idea whether he met the naked mole rat, which I think, again, visually, skin-wise, is probably the closest to descriptions of a squonk, right?
Yeah, I could see that. Did we really describe it, like, full... in a full way, like looking at these pictures and describing
it? We've got the photos here. These, it varies a little bit, of course, because there's no actual photograph of a squonk, or there's nothing claiming to be a photograph. Instead, we have artistic depictions. And in most of those depictions, what we see is a largely quadruped creature. Its eyes vary, but they always are weeping. Sometimes there's a little bit of, you know, when people cry really hard and a little snot comes out of their nose, there's a little bit of that for the guy. He's got warts, wrinkles. He has sometimes a little tail, sometimes not. There were a couple pictures I saw where he looked a little bit more reptilian, but I would say in most of them, he looks more like a mammal with a weird, awkward face. Or there's one where he looks kind of like the one that becomes a meme. He looks almost like a small species of bug combined with bovine or goat-like legs.
A little bit of water bear quality to it.
Like tardigrade almost.
Just a little bit, but his little goat legs are interesting and they're sort of oddly spaced. You know what I mean? They're sort of like strangely in the middle and then he sticks out in the front and the back, you know? It's he does seem to be a bit of an unfortunate creature.
I was going to say it reminds me a bit of a short-nosed echidna if you weren't really close up to it and you didn't see the spiky bits. Mm-hmm. You may mistake them for folds and or warts.
That's a good point. It reminds me of the stuff we did on the frogmen cryptids. The idea about creatures getting misidentified is pretty frequent. But even if, okay, we don't know how tongue-in-cheek these books are meant to be. Are they meant to be a fun, like, McSweeney's type thing, or is it like just a cash grab, or is it like a coffee table book of its time? did the people writing this genuinely believe in it? I'm going to say probably not. But it's tough for us to tell. We can't also see the squonk emergent in other works of American folklore. Paul Bunyan runs into a squonk. It's the same story. Someone hears the weeping or the wailing and they try to mimic it. And then they get close to the squonk. They catch the squonk. The squonk disappears. The guy's got an MO. which is, he's got an emo MO. He's got an emo. No, no, we'll let it go. No,
oh, no. I'll have what he's having. No, I was going to say earlier, like, he is a very emo little fellow. He's in his feelings, you know, a lot, which you got to appreciate in a cryptid. Mm-hmm. At least he knows, you know, how to feel. At least he knows how to emote.
He knows who he is, apparently. Mm-hmm. There's a gift to that. I think one of the reasons we can answer the question about how sincere these authors may or may not be is by just giving a quick laundry list of other animals or life forms listed and explored in the Fearsome Creatures book from 1910. They include positively Seussian names like the Bildad, the Tripodero, which sounds so cool. The Tripodero sounds like a name of a 1970s station wagon to me.
Sure does. Well, you guys, I mean, the table of contents in this Fearsome Critters book that we've been referring to is just absolutely a feast for the senses. I think we've all been dying to just, like, read some of our favorites.
Do it.
Oh, I don't know. I guess one that comes to mind for me is the... There's the Columbia River sand squink, not to be confused with the squawk. This is a squink, mind you. And the come at a body, it's like a threat. Like, come at a body, bro. Come at me. Come on. I dare you. Not to mention the side hill googer, not cougar, and subspecies.
Hmm. I found stuff on the Shagamaw, guys. It has the four legs of a bear and the hind legs of a moose and is, quote, given to devouring the clothing of lumbermen.
Oh, mm-hmm. Really, really, really likes flannel.
And then there's, of course, the Snolagoaster, which sounds like a snot-based roller coaster
yeah.
of some sort, right? I don't know. These are clearly not scientific names, though the team does give them to the animals in each entry. You can find this book for free online, thanks to services like archive.org. So you can read the whole thing if you like.
I do have to say that some of them have like fun, really fun alternate names. Like this one here is called the Dingamall, but then in parentheses it says Plunkus. So which is it, the Dingamall or the Plunkus? And I said this to you guys off air, and as I think probably listeners are already getting irritated with me about, I'm becoming very obsessed with modular synthesizers, and the Plunkus and the Squonk both sound like great names for modules that make beeps and boops.
I'm going to shout one more out, guys. It's the hoop snake. The way I am looking at it here, described as a snake that places its tail in its mouth.
So it's like an Ouroboros.
It is, and then it rolls at a very yeah. high speed.
There's a lot of Wild West tales about that guy, too. It's so weird.
Really, really impossible to dodge.
It's very scary.
Remember that circle ship in Prometheus? They seemed to have a really difficult yeah. time dodging because they just kept running in a line as the circle ship was rolling after them.
You can also check out fearsomecritters.org. Which is the modern day descendant of this and has much, much more on there, including, of course, the milking trout, which
of course
bothers me.
You guys know I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but isn't there that Harry Potter offshoot called like Fantastic Beasts
and Where to find them?
I think this seems like a similar kind of codex.
Mm. And so with these names, what we could say is we're seeing more folklore collection than hard investigative science. And we have to ask ourselves, with all those other creatures identified in the book, what happened to them? Why did the squonk become the breakout star of this American cryptozoography? In this case, it's because of the internet. The internet inspired a renaissance of squonk lore, fandom, and perhaps even genuine belief. I think it was in the 2010s, we started seeing a lot of memes and posts of the squonk, the most famous being drawn by Ashley Gerst. That's the one where the legs are really small and in the center of the body. And people would share this picture, and then they would share another picture. It's like, he's just like me. Or he gets it because he's a mythical creature that's so ugly that he hides from plain sight and spends most of his time weeping. So that's classic internet reaction stuff, you know? And shout out to our good friends over at Know Your Meme, who have a neat little article on the internet history of the squonk. I was surprised by how many of these I felt like I recognized once I started looking at them. Did you guys look at this? Did you see the different macro, or what are they called? Image macro responses?
Yeah, for sure. No, I guess I didn't realize until we started talking about it, this was something that I had experienced in passing. Yes.
Yeah, you know, like a picture of that macro of the squonk, and then, you know, the picture under it is that William Dafoe meme where he's saying, you know, I'm something of a blank myself. But he says, I'm something of a squonk myself.
Damn, some of these got the squonk looking kind of fearsome, though.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of creature that would hunt you down, you know, and stalk you from the grasses.
It looks like a mildly deformed bulldog to me.
Mm, yeah, like someone edited out the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys remember that movie, The Relic?
Yes.
It was like a creature that ran around and ate people in the museum. It kind of looks like that. The guy was scary. He had sort of tusk-like teeth like that.
Was The Relic the one where the creature can adapt?
I don't think so.
I don't think that's a different one that came out the same way. Okay, this one's part reptilian. I'm looking at it now. Okay.
Yeah, The Relic was with, what's her name? Penelope Ann Miller and Tom Sizemore. And the whole thing takes place, I believe, in the Museum of Natural History in New York. And there's a creature that is, you know, stalking the curators of the museum and tearing them to shreds. But he kind of looks squonk-like. He's got those weird goat legs that kind of invert. You know what I mean? That's what made me think about it.
And they call him the Cthulhu in there. So there is a cryptid star. And cryptids play a huge part in pop culture. So does the squonk. While there's not any proof of this guy accepted by modern science yet, he sure shows up in a lot of other things. I think maybe we pause for a word from our sponsor, if we're all cool with that, and then look at the squonk as a cultural phenomenon.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we have returned. Guys, I had no idea how popular Squonk was with musicians in the 70s. It was unexpected to me.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you know, you got a lot of these 70s bands that are doing the prog rock thing, and a lot of that's tied up in Dungeons and Dragons-y type lore. And I don't know, the Squonk is a pretty great candidate for a mythical being to write a riff about.
Well, yeah, you just imagine somebody came across a copy of that 1910 book, right, about the lumbermen, the fearsome creatures and the lumbermen, and they're like, ah, we absolutely must feature the Squonk.
What's the sensitive fellow?
Yeah. I wonder why there's not more stuff about some of those other ones. I feel like there's untapped potential in the Gilligaloo, the bird that lays square eggs. I mean, come on, that's got to be a thing.
I think for the names alone, you know, some of them are syllabically challenging, right? Like putting in Central American wind tosser into a song lyric is a little bit tough. Cannabis could do it. Kendrick could do it. But I don't know if he will. So yeah, you're right, though. There is this specificity. Also kind of reminds me of this was an era where those songs with more specificity of reference seemed a little more welcomed in popular culture. I'm not sure. Maybe they were just thinking outside the box, man. Maybe they were just more inspired, or like so many people on the internet today, saw themselves in the story of the Squonk. We're talking off air. I think I can't remember who it was when we were talking about this before we filmed that video. I think we were all surprised to learn that Genesis has a song dedicated to the Squonk.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm a big Genesis fan, and I don't know this record super well. It is the first one that you pointed out, Ben, with Phil Collins taking over as lead vocals. But I think we've talked about, too, that like Phil Collins does such a good job of singing exactly like Peter Gabriel. It's almost uncanny and a little bit sus, if you ask me. But I guess it kind of made sense because they were singing, you know, he was singing backup for him for so long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's also apparently there is some Genesis lore about this wherein they say that Collins wrote the lyrics. The bassist, what's his last name? Banks?
He's the keyboard player, I believe. Oh, okay. Banks. Yeah.
Okay. I believe that he and another band member wrote the music, and they asked Collins to write the lyrics. And so according to the story, he had recently read a book called The Song of the Dodo by a guy named David Quammen, and it talks about multiple species going extinct, how they can become mythologized and romanticized as these supernatural creatures after their demise. And so he just made him think of the Squonk. And so he wrote that song, and Genesis, I guess, looked around the room and said, okay, yeah.
Sure, Phil. Let's do it.
Do you think that was their energy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great, Phil. The sad. You want to make a song about the sad one that turns into tears? Great.
There we go. He's like, you know, dragons are a thing, Phil, or Bigfoot. There are a lot of choices.
The hoop snake goes really fast. Just saying.
Hoop snake goes hard. Yeah.
Just veer to the left a little bit. You'll be fine.
Mongolian death worm. I mean, yeah, it was that Squonk was definitely a choice. ZZ Top may have also shouted out the Squonk, and this was their first album. It's a song called Squank, and kind of like the early drawings of the Squonk, this seems a little more aggressive. Like it's about how the Squonk lives in the swamp and it'll come get you. I don't know if that's coincidence.
Just could also be a portmanteau of skank and wank.
It could. It very well could. We haven't talked to ZZ yet.
We really haven't. I always thought ZZ Top was a person.
Oh, like Holland Oates?
Yeah, exactly.
I was always mystified by that one guy who didn't have a beard.
What's his deal?
He's the drummer.
Was he not permitted to have a beard?
Was it in the contract? Yeah. I don't know. But we do know Steely Dan has a song called Any Major Dude Will Tell You, which I had not heard. I don't know about you guys. I had not heard this until this. Well, it has the lyrics in there. Have you ever seen a squonk's tears? Well, look at mine.
Okay. Because they're just as real.
I guess they also identified, with the squonk.
I think that's what it is, guys. I think there's sort of like a lot of these rock band people are sensitive at heart. You know, they might put up a tough front, but they're sensitive folks, and they relate to the squonk.
I could see that. You know, isn't that the mark of a good story? You see yourself in it to some degree. There's also a Final Fantasy character named Squonk. It's much more bird-like.
What? Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
What Final Fantasy is this in?
This is in Final Fantasy 14, I want to say.
Ah. Okay. I am not familiar with this.
He is something called a Rank B Elite Mark in the Sea of Clouds.
Okay.
I understand some of those words. He has a chirp attack. There's also the legendary performance group collective out of Pennsylvania called Squonk. And what's that immersive theater thing we liked in New York?
Meow Wolf.
Meow Wolf.
No.
Sleep No More
and Omega Mart Meow Wolf stuff. If you're fans of that kind of thing, you might be fans of Squonk, folks. Apparently, they've traveled around the world and the country, creating this really trippy, edgy, what did someone call it? Their reviews are pretty interesting.
Post-industrial performances? That sounds fun.
Crackpot, modernist, and cartoony Michelangelo's, Rust Belt Dada, Debussy meets Godzilla. Those are pretty great reviews. I think we would try
Debussy meets Godzilla. I have no idea what that would even entail, but I want to find out. Sign me up. You've also got this term chemical squonks, which sounds like a performance art thing in and of itself, which is actually a sciencey term for a stable substance held in a solution.
Yeah.
But it can't be isolated or captured without being dissolved.
Yeah, so the real name for those things is chemical squonks.
That's wild. Well, and I'm excited to get to this part, Ben, because we talked earlier a little bit about the idea of being sent on a snipe hunt, you know, and which, you know, is usually a stand-in for like a wild goose chase. Like, this is not something that you're ever going to actually find. So what about a squonk hunt? Is that similar, or is there the potential that you might find the damn thing?
I don't know. I mean, it feels like it's maybe a regional variation. The idea of going out to hunt for squonk, maybe like sending someone to hunt for snipe. Did you guys ever get sent on a snipe hunt?
It came up in a very early Boy Scout event, camp out thing. I only have vague recollections of it. As you know, I didn't progress very far in the organization, but I do remember mention of a snipe hunt.
Mm-hmm. Pretty common thing, I think, especially in the South.
Mm. Did you have to go on a snipe hunt, Matt?
I go on snipe hunts every night, dude.
Just to stay on your toes?
Yeah.
Keep the head on a swivel?
That's right.
All right. You got a snipe security expert. It's
There's an episode of King of the Hill where it's not a snipe hunt. It's something else. Maybe it is, actually. The Order of the Straight Arrow. Yeah, that's the episode, and they send him on a snipe hunt. It's great.
Arrow joke. They do make you sleep rough in the Order of the Arrow. Or at least it did when I joined. It was really weird. You know what they gave us for the night? They gave us a paper bag with two matches.
Oh, geez.
An egg.
So you set the book bag on fire to warm
bacon.
Yourself?
I don't know, man. I was like, I'm just not going to eat tonight.
All right.
But it was weird. I don't think that's strictly legal. I don't know. That's a question with that hunt. Like in both the snipe case, like you guys are saying, it's generally acknowledged, right, that a snipe is considered a fictional creature. It's a prank to send people hunting for it. But do we think that people in Pennsylvania or abroad genuinely believe in the existence of the squonk, or is it seen as more like a powerful symbolic thing?
Well, I just really quickly back to the King of the Hill episode. As it turns out, Bobby takes it very seriously and accidentally kills a whooping crane, which is endangered. So it's a real problem there. I think he doesn't actually kill it. He just beats it up and it comes back. It rouses later. But
God, I think
it is symbolic. Yeah, absolutely. But symbolism can be taken very far by a belief, you know?
Yeah, I don't think anybody actually thinks Squawk's real, but I bet it's a fun thing for kids. Same as a lot of the tall tales we tell them to, you know, help them understand why there's so many presents under the tree and that kind of thing. I bet it's a fun little thing, especially if you're out in them hemlock forests.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Laurel Hill, right? That's one of them. And then, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, folks. Is this maybe a misidentified real animal and that misidentification later gave way to a story that was just too interesting to fade into obscurity? If that is indeed the case, what was that original animal? The echidna idea is really interesting.
Yeah, I think for my money, that entry from CC Beach where it says Windassault Creek set traps for an otter, two mink, and caught two squonk. In my head, that is a stand-in for useless creatures that I can't make any profit on.
Like trash
don't
fish.
Have any meat that Nasty, will dude. Be good for me.
I think that's right.
Does that make sense?
Throw away. Mm-hmm. No, you're totally
dude.
That makes sense to me.
100%.
Yeah, because he's definitely not getting what he's looking for in that trapping situation.
Yeah, creatures that would set off a trap, right? They mm-hmm. The pelt is useless and all that stuff. I don't know.
So maybe it's like archaic slang.
Yeah.
For just a generic trash animal that
is
not
profitable.
Yeah,
the weeping, it's not about the squonk weeping. It's about you weeping because you just spent a bunch of time and effort and you caught that. And now you don't get to eat and you don't get any whatever.
That's a great idea. I mean, I think you were right about the suicide dog bridge out there in Europe. So this feels like a really reasonable explanation to me, a really smart one too. We wanted to end, maybe that has solved the mystery. We wanted to end with a big, big thank you to everybody for tuning in, of course, but also to some folks who gave us some great news. If you happen to be in the area of Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and you want a really rollicking swamp-related time, then allow us to introduce you to an entire annual festival dedicated to celebrating the world's saddest cryptid, Squonkapalooza, August 10th, 2024.
Hey, we should have a little Leo party.
Sure.
The little Leo contingent attending mm-hmm. the Squonkapalooza.
Heck yeah.
They have fun, games, speakers, performance entertainment, vendors, snacks, of course. And we reached out to the good folks at Squonkapalooza when we heard about them after this video, and just the nicest people. I want to give a shout out to Lisa of Cryptid Comforts and Joe of Cryptoteology. They both sell a lot of like handcrafted cryptid merchandise, and they gave us the story of how Squonkapalooza came to be. Lisa wrote a book called Why So Sad, Squonk? With her friend Brandy Hale, who is the troubadour of Squonkapalooza, which I feel like is a really cool job title. Lisa teamed up with Joe, and he is the boots on the ground out there in Pennsylvania. They wanted to shout out their fellow cryptid creator, Holly Who Art, who designed the website, helps with the tech side. So shout out to Squonkapalooza. Let us know if you've gone. Let us know if you're going. Who knows? Like Matt said, we might end up in town too.
Absolutely. And let us know if you plan on being there. You can reach out to us in the usual social media places of note. We are Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, YouTube, and X, nay, Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show, however, on Instagram and TikTok.
You can give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Why not call in and leave us a 3-minute voicemail while you are out in the Pennsylvania forests hunting for a squonk? We want to hear it. Maybe do they do wood knocks? We don't know. Wood weeps? Just call us in. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your message and name on the air. If you don't want to do that, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.